Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 41. Lower Decks, season 1, episode 5, Cupid's Errant Arrow.
Unfortunately, we might have to cancel the demolition.
What? Why?
Is the moon too dense?
No, it's more of a diplomatic issue.
Diplomatic? Isn't the moon going to plummet into the planet and ignite the atmosphere?
And, you know, kill everyone?
I've told them that many times, but they simply don't care.
No!
You don't know what you're talking about!
All the moons we pray to, that's one of the most important!
It controls the tides for our summer crop!
My family has lived on that moon for generations!
Moons can't plummet! That's something the government made up to control us!
You're not listening to me!
Tadpoles.
All right, so that's
who does that zone?
The Ninja Turtles, bro.
Who's responsible for that? Don't feed me that.
Well, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 41, and
whoa, really?
Yeah. We've been doing this a while.
I know.
It's awesome.
We should have a special 100th episode.
Yes.
When we get there.
Oh, I was going to suggest we could do it early.
We'll make one early.
Like next week, it's our 100th
we'll
episode.
Bank one, yeah.
We'll just, we'll hedge our bets.
What do we do when
we have Patrick Stewart?
What do we do when we make our 99th one and we technically have 100 because we have that vaulted one?
Vaulted.
Oh, well, the vaulted one will probably the bank episode.
Yeah,
I think the term of art is bank episode. So, we have a one episode in the bank in case there's a calamity.
Maybe there's more banks.
But the point is once we get to 99 new ones, not counting the banked one, does that mean we now have 100 episodes?
Well, the banked one is a new one. If you haven't heard it, it's new to you, and so you don't count it now. I'm just presuming that between now, the 41st episode of the podcast, and the 100th episode of the podcast, that probably that episode will air. In fact, I hope it does, unless our subscriber base, which is growing exponentially week by week, gets to the point where we can just charge people on Patreon to listen to an old episode we recorded back in, what was it, November or something?
So when you say there's 41 episodes, actually there's 41 and a bonus episode.
Well, yes. We have recorded 42.
Yeah.
We will. It would be fair to say
this makes the
that.
Whole episode thing even more confusing.
We have recorded 42 episodes.
Because when we say episode, we have to differentiate between the Star Trek episode and our podcast episode, and now we actually have
one more. But I find that aspect kind of charming.
Charming.
Yeah, I mean, I do admit it's somewhat frustrating posting. It's like, all right, episode 41, Cupid's Errant Arrow, Lower Decks, Season 1, Episode 5. What really drives me nuts is when we do a double episode or a two-part episode. That just drives me crazy in terms of formatting. But, you know, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You're not going to do much about it.
Do what you love.
So, we are discussing Cupid's Errant Arrow.
And the title gives away kind of like what's going to happen in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sort of. But first, real quick, let's do a couple of updates from last week.
I knew what was going to happen.
Updates.
I mean, I know it's not...
There's
the episode is more important than just what that one part at the end is. But I was like, oh, this is a setup for bullshit. Not like bullshit isn't bad. I mean, like setup. Like Boimler has to deal with bullshit.
As
is what
in
I mean.
Stuff.
Boimler bullshit.
That is apparently, seemingly more and more his lot in life is to deal with bullshit. And often deal with it poorly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. No, but from last week we discussed Moist Vessel.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, our Philly correspondent, Jimmy, is back in town. He's driven back down here.
Jimmy's back.
He's braved all the elements to be with us again this week.
He just stayed here.
I'm just sitting on the couch.
He didn't go back to Philly.
He won't leave.
That guy on the couch.
We discussed Moist Vessel last week, and one of the things that we talked about was whether or not, we were discussing the idea that Tendi's need for approval, like her desire to have people like her, how that might be related to her Orion heritage, given that presumably in Orion culture, women, by all appearances, women are valued based on how attractive they are, how many people they can attract. That's important to them, right? And we posted a highlight that was a highlight of that conversation, and a lot of people commented, a lot of people agreed. A bunch of people said, well, you got to watch Enterprise, where you find out actually it's the men who are the slaves the whole time.
Oh, right. right.
So, so all right. It's that's I get where people are coming with that point. It's not a totally invalid point. I would argue against it from a couple different perspectives. One is that
you must be racist for calling me racist because I wasn't even thinking of that when I used those suggestive words.
First, that episode is, and we will discuss it at a certain point, it's problematic to the extreme. There are a lot of weird issues with that episode.
Which one?
The episode, oh, I'm forgetting the name of it.
Of which series?
Of Enterprise. There's a whole episode, and I know a lot of you guys haven't seen it, so I won't give spoilers here, but the long and the short of it is the Enterprise crew ends up dealing with some Orion women, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there are some hijinks and stuff. Mm-hmm. It plays like a 1970s sitcom, but with less progressive attitude. It's an unusual... Enterprise is pretty good, but Enterprise was in that early 2000s, you know.
It was a dark time.
There was some weird stuff going on culturally. George Bush was trying to get an amendment to ban gay marriage just a few years before.
And he was going
to
get rid of Social Security.
Oh, man. But anyway.
Social Security.
So,
torture.
First of all, that episode, I would not use that as evidence for that proposition. Secondly, everything else we've seen in about Orion culture has been the opposite. It's been that women are subjugated. They're not always subjugated, and there are strong Orion women and all that. But anyway, this is all a long way of saying I don't know how much it matters because we posted this on Instagram, and the actor Noel Wells, who plays Ensign Tendi, responded that yes, indeed, it is.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
It is based off of Orion heritage. So there you go. That's cool.
All she said was yes.
Yes. But that's sufficient.
That's all you need.
I'm going to take as much out of that single syllable word that I can. to support that comment.
If you spelled it Y-E-H-E-S, it would be a two-syllable word. Yes.
Yeah. Or if you...
Yes.
No, it doesn't work, because I was going to say Australians, but Australians say no.
No.
No. You know, and but we love just, our Australian friends.
That's just a long syllable.
Yeah, that's just flowing together, wave like all the waves they have on their beaches, right? Yeah. Don't they have a lot of waves on their beaches?
Yeah, jellyfish.
Jellyfish.
Yeah, all those
Portuguese
jellyfish.
Man of War.
It's got a lot of waves on those beaches.
A lot of sharks.
Mm. So anyway, I just wanted to address that briefly. Was there anything else to address from last week?
Most people
seem to have enjoyed last week's episode. We seem to enjoy last week's episode. All right, so
that's probably it.
No more follow-up on last week's episode.
Old business.
Now we move on to the new business.
This
is this week.
With Stardate 57601.3.
Personal log?
Boimler's personal log.
Personal log.
Yeah.
Boim, boim.
Boim.
Boimy. Bum bow.
It's fun having the Boimler personal log thing works pretty well as a pseudo replacement for the captain's log.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did we decide that the Stardates, they do mean stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody figured out along the way that they do actually mean something. Do you think they originally meant anything?
Yeah.
On TOS, they no doubt meant nothing.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
But on, I think by TNG, they had adopted some form of coherence.
There is some stuff you can look up on the internet and it will calculate what the start date.
But you never know.
Even the website's like, you know, it's kind of iffy.
The tricky thing with the start date is the in-universe reason.
Like that Nirvana album, In-Universe?
Oh.
In-Universe?
In-Universe.
In utero.
Nobody knows
Nirvana.
Nobody remembers Nirvana.
In universe, the reason for stardates is to accommodate and mitigate against time dilation through faster than light travel.
Time dilation. That's right. They got to deal with that shit.
But the thing is, that it's not. You can't go faster than light anyway. So it's essentially meaningless other than to define some sort of temporal order of the actual quote-unquote Star Trek events.
But they still, even if you're going less than the speed of light, there's still differences in...
No, less than the speed of light there would be. I mean, this is a whole different conversation.
No, we're talking about like, we're talking, yeah, I know, but we're talking about like, they're going less than the speed
of... No, I said more than the speed of light. It sort of negates the idea of time dilation because since you can't go more than the speed of light anyway, nobody knows what time dilation would mean under that context because time dilation happens as you approach the speed of light.
Yeah, it's as you approach it, but like time still changes depending on how fast you're going. Like if you have a clock on the Earth and a clock on a ship.
Absolutely. It's just I'm just commenting on the fact that since the concept of warp drive, at least the fictitious context. It's effectively meaningless to try to describe it because it's not a real thing.
Warps.
So then trying to like ascribe something else, like trying to map out precisely what I'm saying is you can't ever.
Might as well talk about hyperspace.
You can't. Hyperspace. Yeah, you can't actually figure out how a stardate works other than from a literary perspective. We need to know that the events of All Good Things happened before the events of Endgame in Voyager. You know what I'm saying? That's what it means. Right. That's the utility of it for us. I don't see how it's going to help, you know, in theory in the universe, it's supposed to standardize time so that when you're flying all around the universe and the galaxy, the quadrant or whatever, that it, you know, that when you call another ship through subspace, which is another magic thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about,
it's the same date.
How subspace and, you know, warp are related to each other, because subspace, I would imagine there's no sort of changing of, there's no time wackiness in subspace. It lives in its own magic world where it just gets there instantly. The message gets there instantly. That's all
sometimes
you need to know.
Sometimes it's instantly. Sometimes it's like, oh, it's going to take 12 hours.
Yeah, sometimes, depending on the plot. But the, when you're going through warp, I mean, presumably time should do something wacky, but you know.
Yeah, but who knows what it is. It
doesn't really matter,
since
I guess.
It's made up.
Yeah, right. It's not hard science.
It's just the vehicle for fun.
Yeah, there you go. Vehicle for fun. All right. Like that, like start like Picard's moon traveler on Nemesis.
Oh yeah, his off-road vehicle.
It was a vehicle for fun.
Patrick's favorite Star Trek movie.
Inexplicable off-road vehicle.
Oh, I love this.
I've always been meaning to. I don't know if he says that. I've always been. I hate with that. When that's another thing I hate. You know how I hate? I don't like. Well, I know it's not that I care, but when
you don't like when people say that's an order.
Yeah, it's like it's not my favorite.
And you don't like when people say I've always wanted to do this when there's no prior character development that would remotely suggest they wanted to do that.
Yeah, it's just a whole me too. I can relate to the characters. But to be fair, like everyone does it, and that doesn't make it right. But it's also
no. I think it's fair to point out because it doesn't matter if everyone
does it.
I don't even know if
Picard said that in that part, but yeah.
I'm sure he said something along those lines.
Yeah, but it is fucked up. I was watching Expanse and that one dude said it at one point in the Expanse. The tough dude.
The tough dude.
Which
the guy
one?
Who looks kind of like you?
The tough dude.
No, he doesn't look like me. He looks like Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
The Matt Damon? Well, you don't look like Matt Damon. I'll grant you that.
He was the one that beats. He's the guy that beats. He's good at beating the crew and stuff.
Yeah, he looks a little like you in some pictures when he's got the beard and stuff.
Well, he's very cute. So I take that as a compliment.
Cute. No, you are
you are
and
a sexy man.
Are both
sir.
Really cute.
Yeah, he's got more muscles than me though, for sure.
Yeah, but you can build those up.
Yeah,
you can build those up.
Lift some weights.
You'd be nicer to hug
if I had more muscles or more
fluff. More lat.
Well, you also have the advantage of not being a psychopath, or indeed, if you are, hiding it much better than that character.
Yeah,
does.
Yeah. I got problems, yo.
Lift some weights.
Let's lift some weights. Get rid of my problems. There was no cold open.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happened? There's no teaser. That was weird.
Yeah, so...
what is this, a pilot?
Right to the title.
Right.
Is this a pilot episode? We got no cold open?
Yeah, it was weird. So it just played the thing, and then...
Boom, went in there.
Then talked about Mixtus 3, and they were blowing up the moon.
Yeah,
is that, like, that's pretty much... It seems like... Kind of like it's not generic. See, that's the funny thing about a show like this is it doesn't seem generic when they do things like that, because it's more of like feels like either an homage or poking fun at Star Trek. It's one or the other.
It's both.
Yeah, right.
I think
totally both.
I think the strength of this particular plot. I will. Spoiler alert. I very much enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I did too.
I did too.
And,
Jesse, did you?
Oh yeah.
I think that.
Yeah.
I think. We're seeing the route to success for this show in that the ones that have been successful, and I'd say last week's episode and this week's episode qualify, they have a plot line that is essentially indistinguishable from a standard Star Trek plot line. Mm-hmm. They veer it and play it for laughs, but the basic structure of the plot line could be taken out, and it's not that it's a ripoff. Because your point, Dan, where it is more of an homage, but I'd even go beyond that and say it's a problem that evokes similar problems. Ship is coming in and it's helping a planet facing a disaster, but it still does it in a different. It's a different plot that we haven't seen
it
before.
Makes it its own thing as well, because we're all there. We're just putting the pieces like. Oh yeah, put it in, fit it in. It'll fit. Come on. Oh, sex noises.
So,
I like when his voice and his pitch go like super high.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
He starts freaking out. Yeah,
yeah, it's great.
He's a good character. And you know what, Patrick? You know where I have seen that guy before?
The Boys.
Yeah, that's where I've seen that guy before.
Which is what I keep telling you. I was like, he's in The Boys.
Yeah,
the
yeah. Boys. I didn't want to admit it before, the but I wanted to. Back in town. I kept thinking he looked like not Green Arrow, the dragon dude from the Marvel, the Netflix Marvel. You know, the Enter the Dragon.
Iron Fist.
Iron
dude.
Fist. Thank you, Jimmy.
He doesn't look like that guy.
That was awesome.
He kind of looks like that guy who's also in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He played the king. So blowing up the moon. When I saw it, I was thinking to myself, did this happen in a Star Trek episode before? And it may have, it may not have, but I can't think of what, if it
they
had
have,
or not.
There's been things where they have to evacuate this and that.
Right.
Or
yeah.
they have to try yeah. to, you know, move an asteroid or moon yeah. or something, yeah. or Q is causing trouble. Or whatever. But this was, we have to implode the moon, we have a weird force field around it, we have all these construction platforms. They're combining a lot of different elements from other
people living
Star
on
Trek
all those
plots.
Moons.
But the other thing that was interesting that made it a little bit different than other Star Trek plots is the amount of math that was involved, because it was all about the orbital mechanics, about what was going to happen.
That's good.
Two important things here. One part of the plot is there's the disaster, but the other part of the plot is the political aspect yeah. of it. That you have all these people who are facing imminent death, a lot of them, and they're arguing over it.
Right.
Which was hit close to home.
Yeah. So it felt like, oh.
Felt like
man.
Today.
Yeah. It's like, oh, the government's doing it.
Yeah, right. That one was like way on the nose. But yeah, they also had, they pray to it. So they need it because they're praying to it.
And it helps with our summer crops.
Yeah, it helps with the summer crops. And then the family lived on the moon for generations. So the thing is that by itself, controlling tides for the summer crops is like the most reasonable one. But what ruins it all is, of course, is it's going to crash into the planet.
Exactly.
So it's irrelevant. Even though that's a reasonable thing to want that moon.
All of them are irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all.
But like, you know, yeah, the guy who's just like, does government control us? That was perfect to end on that, because Freeman was just like, oh, God. Jeez, here
I
we
like
are.
Her, yeah, and she freaked out too a bunch.
Which one?
Freeman.
Oh, Freeman. Yeah.
She was just like, ugh, you all suck.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't explore too much the other captain who was acting all pompous at the beginning.
Oh, in the beginning of the Vancouver?
Yeah, I guess it was just another reminder that this ship, the Cerritos, is sort of... I guess it's a reminder that the Vancouver's all great.
Because it's a Parliament-class ship.
Yeah.
It just looked like an updated version of
And that's what Mariner was there.
Mariner's it's basically the same ship.
Yeah, but then Tendi and Rutherford were like, it has...
Oh, but they lost their ship. They're like, woo, T-88.
It had fluidic processors that self-replicate their own...
The thermal mesh is double lattice.
They have fluidic processors that self-replicate their own silicas. For some reason, that made me think back to the TAS episode where they were flying through, that we reviewed, where they were flying through that giant nebula creature and they was talking about the silica was dark matter or something. I might have been getting it mixed up, but anyways. The titanium hull brackets, which they mentioned twice in the episode. Of course, the TI-88s, which invoked memories of TI-82s and TI-83s in school, the calculus, which I don't know what they're on now with that. If they even
It's probably still a TI-83.
The thermal mesh, I bet it's calculators. Double lattice.
Yeah, the thermal
double
mesh.
Lattice.
It's got so much lettuce. And then...
and the doors and the...
I just love that when they
doors
land,
go whoosh, right? Yeah. So and then the captain, of course, is all arrogant. So I guess it's just all part of the. It wasn't important the captain's role. It was just sort of to express that the Vancouver was a fancy pants ship.
I really liked when they were in the Vancouver's shuttle bay, and Tendi and Rutherford were all like, you know, creaming their pants about it.
Yeah.
And Mariner was like,
the shuttle bay
looked exactly like the Serena. I mean, indistinguishable. In fact,
it just had a big fancy sign that said like USS Vancouver.
But the Cerritos has the exact same. I mean, they use the exact same camera angles to emphasize that it's a newer ship. Yeah. But it's not that different.
I don't think I actually realized they were on the ship like the very first shot that they were on.
It's almost confusing, because it's so identical.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, by the way, cream my pants. I understand that that's a solid phrase to use, and don't stop using it on my account, but it always grosses me out so much.
It is
cream
a
of
gross.
Corn.
Like, some people don't like the word moist, right?
Moist
Speaking
vessel.
Of moist vessel.
Who
like
doesn't?
Moist.
But that's their problem.
Some people we know.
Well, I
do not like it?
Yeah, I think so.
While we are occasionally crude and crass on this podcast, we don't have any particular desire to offend, unless you're offended, in which case, fuck you.
Go fuck yourself.
You have no right to not be offended.
Not
in the United States of America, anyway.
I totally support your usage of cream your pants.
But
I just had to point out that it like always brings this gross imagery into my
head. It's a gross
gross anime or something.
It's a very sophomore.
It's like anime tentacle stuff. It starts to think about that.
Oh,
you know?
Well, that's
Tentai.
Just your brain going.
Tentai?
Consenticles.
Consenticles. Yeah,
my... So... The cream your pants, it also makes me feel weird. It's not a phrase, as you all know me, it's not a phrase I would use frequently. But I did think it was the most sort of woke phrase to use to convey, because I think it applies to both men and women.
I agree.
People of all sorts of sexual identities and genders. You can cream your pants regardless of your
whatever.
Mental, social identity, physical identity. Doesn't matter. You can cream your pants.
It maybe shows that I'm regressive, because the thought of a woman creaming her pants is strange to me, even though I know it's real and it's a thing that happens.
I know it's real.
It's real. I know that it's just when I think about it worded like that, I get all this strange imagery all confused. And that means that I need to, you know, be more progressive. So I need to work on myself. This is not your battle, Patrick. This is my battle for myself.
It's our battle.
It's our battle.
I will fight by your side.
Oh, that's great.
I love how sophisticated our show is.
Yeah.
It's
super
fantastic.
Super soft.
Not too shabs.
Sophisticated.
So, a couple of good guest stars this week.
Yes, one in particular.
The main one, Gillian Jacobs.
Yes. Pronounced with a G.
Pronounced Gillian. Gillian. If you say Gillian, she gets super upset.
Super duper. She's in a show called Love now or something.
Love. She was made her big break, Community. I think, was in Community, of course.
Because apparently she wasn't even a comedic actor, she said.
I think she went to Juilliard for dramatic acting.
Yeah, so this was her first comedic role, and it just kind of came naturally to her. It's funny how that works. Like Booger, what's that guy? Oh, I feel bad for even forgetting his name, because I knew. Booger. But I don't feel bad because I forget everybody's name now. It's a real problem. I need to start taking B12.
Me and Revenge of the Nerds.
It's called
Booger.
Old.
Dan has not had a series of mini strokes.
No,
that rumor is false.
Yeah.
No, nobody mentioned that.
He did not go to Walter Reed.
Nobody said that.
Nope.
So I'm gonna look up, and while I look, I'm gonna jack up time. I'm gonna jack up time.
I'll talk about Gillian Jacobs. Gillian Jacobs. Yeah, she was on Community. She was on Love. She a frequent contributor to Comedy Bang Bang, both on the television show and the podcast.
Curtis Armstrong.
There you go.
He was Booger. And he was like a...
He's an American dad.
He said that...
Frequent guest on Harmontown for a while.
Yeah, he said that he was, you know, dramatically trained. I mean, I know a lot of them are, but he was one of those particular kind of like super dramatically trained fancy guys.
Sometimes those people...
And he became
Booger.
Booger.
Which is cool. Some people end up being really good at comedy.
Yeah, right.
Does he do snot?
Yeah, he does snot on American Dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Gillian Jacobs is Glibian. Really great as Barbara Brinson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is Brad Boimler, Barbara Brinson.
Barbara Brinson.
B.B. Wexler.
Which is funny.
She uses barbs because she's a reptoid or whatever. Did you notice her hair looked a little greasy on top? It was just a different, slightly different shade of blonde or yellow or whatever you want to call it on top. The rest of her hair was one color, and on top it was slightly darker, so it made it look like she had a grease spot on her head.
Maybe
like
it was just growing
like
out.
Like
maybe she dyes her hair and grows out. The roots were coming out a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing it probably was, but it looked like somebody squeezed a pizza like a sponge and like oil.
Also, completely plausible.
Yeah.
Completely plausible.
Maybe she just, you know, perspires. Man.
I would think, maybe she's just sweaty.
Yeah, I
think
it was just hard work, man.
You know, some people just perspire, man.
I would think the roots would be a little darker, but you know. That's fine.
Yeah, but how would you know?
Yeah. It's the future, man.
Her hair grows. Yeah. Her hair grows. Look up Larry King, my hair grows. You'll be very happy at what you
bald
find.
Spot?
Does he fart?
Paint your bald spot? Do you paint your bald spot? This is a Larry King joke. It's not an inside joke. Larry King reference.
It sounds like one, but
Larry
it's not.
King, we might have to mention Larry King was once a very powerful news broadcast. I forget sometimes that some of these young people... Larry King was around forever.
Yeah, he was.
As far as we were concerned. Now he's doing some online.
Oh, man, he does stuff
business.
With like still Russian exists. Television.
Yeah, he like
too.
Hangs out
what
with like Russia
fuck?
Today or something.
It's
well,
like,
you know. Rubles is rubles, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
So when he did that recording of like you know, My Hair Grows, who did that recording though? Some fan of what show? What show originated that from, do you think?
I can't remember if it was Don and Mike.
See, that's what I was thinking. I didn't know if it was from
Don and Mike.
Yeah, I don't know if they originated or if they just took it from somewhere.
I know that Don and Mike was a popular morning and then terrestrial radio.
They had radio show. Towers and they shot radio waves and your antenna caught
they
them.
Used to call and they used to prank call
I think they did a lot of coke.
Don Geronimo.
Yes,
Geronimo.
He was arrested a couple times. Anyway,
my
you know, the wild world of afternoon drive time DJs. Pretty pretty wicked stuff in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Back
it's a dead genre now.
Yeah,
it's all robots now. All drive time DJs are robots.
Shock jocks meant something back then.
Those clowns
I don't
in Congress have done it again.
Get a load of those clowns. I don't mean to play nostalgic, but it's true. Like, it, shock jocks, you know, obviously there was a reason to have them back then, and there is zero reason to have shock jocks nowadays.
Yeah, because back then you had 13-year-old boys. Now you don't have those anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have the FCC isn't
great. FCC these
nuts. Everyone gets shit on the internet.
Nobody
but yeah, that's true.
To radio.
That's true. There's no people of ages different than me anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. They're all gone.
But I mean, shock jocks. It just doesn't work.
Are you getting shocked right now?
This is why. That's why Stern moved to satellite radio. Yeah. Serious, and he stopped doing the shock jock thing. He started doing interviews because there's no point.
And he's actually good at that. I'm not implying he wasn't. He was good at it, but he's really good at.
He's good at because he kind of heckles his like interviewers. He kind of interrupts him and talk. Not heckles him as insults him. He's very like gracious and kind. But he's always like trying to like drill them on different subjects. It's
so
pretty
gracious.
Good.
And kind.
Gracious and kind.
So the other guest voice this week was Matt Walsh.
Yes.
Who played
Mike McClintock on Veep.
Yeah, he played the I guess the chief engineer, maybe.
Yeah,
that
was like
the guy
docent.
On the
was he that? I couldn't yeah. I couldn't make out figure out. I was trying to figure out what that voice was because I knew I had heard it and I was like, who is that?
Yeah.
And so Matt Walsh,
I never looked it up.
He was on famously on Veep.
He played Ron Emanuel Docent Jr.
Yeah, Docent.
That's right.
He's made appearances on lots of stuff.
He was lieutenant commander of the.
And he knows
the
fucking admiral.
Yeah,
he was lieutenant command. He was lieutenant commander of the Vancouver.
Lived next to his grandma. Or something.
Right. The admiral lives next to his grandma.
He's on Comedy Bang Bang a lot.
Yeah,
he's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Citizens Brigade.
Yeah, he got started
founder.
On Upright Citizens Brigade. But what's interesting is, you know, with Gillian Jacobs and Matt Walsh, and of course Eugene Cordero is on the you know regular voice cast and stuff. They really have so much of the voice cast has come from the nexus between sort of like the Comedy Bang Bang universe and the Michael Schur universe of like Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, those sorts of things. Good Place. So I don't know. It's fun, interesting. I thought
good
he did
place.
A good job.
Good
I like
place. Good it's a good place. Place.
Matt Walsh is always good, but I don't know if he was doing it on purpose or if it was the casting. But I like that he had a similar vibe and cadence to Billups, you know, to Andy Billups, to Paul Shears. Paul, you know, they're kind of like creating like this whole like this is almost a cookie cutter sort of white, you know, particular style of commanding officer. He's a very different character, of course, in this case.
So the closed captioning kept spelling their pads. When they said pad, it kept spelling it in all caps with two D's.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
two
it always
D's.
Does
yeah.
that.
It's got to have two D's.
It's got to have two D's. So there's one time I liked that's an order line, which was in this, when Lieutenant Commander Ron Emanuel Docent Jr.
Give me back my pad.
He goes, don't kick my pad. That's an order. Yeah. And that was perfect. That was making fun of it.
Yeah, you're right.
don't kick my pad. That's an order. It's fucking hilarious that a superior officer has to tell his inferior is like not to kick his shit around.
Yeah,
you know. So that was pretty. I thought that was fun. See,
I did too. This was I think firmly the B plot in this episode, with the A plot being the Mariner Boimler, Barbara Brinson interactions. But for a B plot, it was fun. I thought there was
no away mission except if you count going on the Vancouver. You could kind of count that as an away.
What was kind of neat was the. The bulk of the B plot was
bulk of the B.
The bulk of the B plot
bulk
was
B.
Strengthening, you know, revisiting and strengthening this budding relationship or friendship between Tendi and Rutherford, which was neat. And we got to see a new ship, and we got to see some of the you know things that drive them, motivate them as characters.
T-88.
But ultimately, the message of the B plot was the message that what's the guy's name again?
Oh, you mean Ron Emanuel Docent Jr.?
Ron Emanuel Docent Jr. He's the key here, because at the whole time we think we're watching Tendi and Rutherford, and this guy is an ancillary character. But then when it comes down to it, he's the message of that plot, which is it can suck to be on the good shit.
It's probably really stressful to calibrate
the dice. I'm sorry, I stole it.
It's okay.
I'm gonna shut up.
No, please talk if you have something to say. I encourage you to talk.
Just gonna shout out references to the dialogue.
It's probably more stressful than towing a
Chicago
than towing a space station. It's probably more. You think it's more or less serious than killing someone who's worse than Hitler? Obviously, you gotta say that it's less serious than killing Hitler, but you know Dyson spheres are big. They have
they're fucking huge.
Yeah, that's a lot of fucking potential lives, you know.
But the idea here, and they've done it in a couple of the previous episodes, again, with these sort of like little side comments, like with in the last episode when the Ascension character was talking about how it's hard to stand out in Starfleet. That was one of those subtle little messages, the types of things that somebody deals with when they're not a Wesley Crusher, when they're not a Jean-Luc Picard, when they're not a top of their class, immediately selected past top positions.
Riker.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Riker and keeps coming up Riker. Like randomly in this show.
And this episode,
everyone worships
and, they said Q again.
I think all the commanders, like lieutenant
hopped
commanders,
up Q on Captain Picard.
Yeah, there. Man.
I think all the lieutenant
he's a Kirk with like
all the commanders. I think basically worship Riker. I think. Is what
I think
did.
They. Did
I do.
Too.
Yeah. I mean, I do.
He's sexy with the goatee.
But it was cool that there was another the whole culmination, the punchline of the B plot was this idea that this person appears to be highly skilled, highly qualified. He got on that ship, but he wants out. He doesn't
he
matter that he's talented. He's used his talents. Now he wants a relaxing job where he doesn't have to worry so much. That's a very relatable thing.
Yeah.
Because so much of Star Trek has been following the best of the best. Even if they're squabbling or whatever, even on Deep Space Nine, for example, these are still like super awesome people with, you know, and we're now getting to see some of the characters who they are still professional. They're still doing good work. And in his case, he clearly is a very top professional to get that posting, but he just doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah. And it gives you the other side of someone other than Mariner who wants to be on the lower decks basically. And actually he just wants to downgrade to a different ship. But still,
you get the impression he just kind of wants a nice little desk job somewhere. Yeah.
So
sit on his butt, not
do his
butt things.
There was a line about so the whole Boimler girlfriend thing. When Mariner did the whole like, you know, you're making this girl up. You could pretty much tell from the beginning that he wasn't making her up as other shows.
Skin.
As other shows will sometimes, you know, do that thing where it's like, oh, he's
ambiguous.
It's ambiguous. And it's like, you pretty much knew from the start that she was real. When they made the reference of when we meet her, it will be on the holodeck. Now, is that that's not a direct creepy Geordi reference, but because Geordi actually copied a real person and did a whole thing and
I think it's more of a Barclay reference.
Barclay reference? Okay, yeah.
Barclay having fantasy girlfriends. And of course, Boimler says, I don't do that anymore.
I like it when he had that outfit. He got that crazy outfit and he was talking about like a liquid lunch arena.
I'll have a hot beer. I mean, a cold beer.
Make it cold.
She was all attracted to him that first.
Like,
too.
He's like, damn, you look like sexy moonwalking as hell, but you're fucking annoying.
And you know, the A plot, it was in some ways something we've seen before, but also because of the Star Trek twist and because of the animated comedy twist, I thought they were able to do it well. I think you could predict near the beginning that it was neither going to be that she's fake, like you said, or a parasite, but nor is it going to be as simple as a miscommunication, right? I don't think at any point in this episode I thought that Mariner was just going to be embarrassed in the end, you know?
Yeah, and I didn't really get the impression that the sort of the villain in that scenario would be Barb. I thought maybe it could be, but I thought I was pointing away from that because the title itself is Cupid's Errant Arrow, which sort of makes it sort of,
it's
you
like,
know,
oh, poor
applies
Boimler.
Someone
have the errant arrow.
Yeah, so someone gets struck by an arrow and then becomes irresistible, which how come nobody else found him irresistible? Or it must have been one of those things where the first person that sees him.
Yeah, I think it was the first person.
They didn't mention that, but I guess that's the assumption.
Or they pick the parasite picked high quality.
Right.
He's
like, right. Like lieutenant. The parasite already picked somebody.
A Mariner definitely didn't.
So
Mariner was thinking that all the people that Barb could be, she could be a secret alien that's going to eat Brad.
Yeah.
She could be a Romulan spy, a salt succubus.
Yeah,
which is
that was
awesome.
Good. I like that. The salt vampire.
That's from TOS.
One of those sexy people in the rompers.
Sexy people in the rompers that murders you just for going on the grass. They did Android, which she tried to shut down the Android by playing a high-pitched noise from the tricorder, which is, you know, classic. That's always going to, usually going to work. So she knew that wasn't it.
Doesn't have a positronic brain.
So instead of a Romulan spy, then she thought he was a surgically altered Cardassian spy, a transporter clone, and Suliban. Not a Suliban.
They also mentioned a dolphin, which is from the TNG episode The Dolphin, which is with this girl and Wesley.
Right.
I think that's season 2, episode 10. You mentioned
is that the skill guy Squill or
that's
Skill?
The grass
is
thing
where he goes, "That's my dorsal."
No, that's a different one. But then there's there's a surgically altered Cardassian spy, as you mentioned. That's a reference to DS9's Second Skin, which is season 3, episode 5 of Deep Space Nine, where Kira wakes up somewhere and she's all like, looks like a Cardassian, and somebody's trying to trick her into thinking that she's a Cardassian. Transporter clone, of course, is a reference to multiple things.
Yeah.
Riker and Tom Riker from Second Chances in TNG.
And then
Kirk in the TOS, where the Enemy Within was one. But yeah. I'm sure there's more. Are there other transporter, like, cloning type things?
There was a lot of things going on with the transporter where it kind of like saved people's lives and made people. So did you mention the one where it made him youthful again from the TAS?
Oh no, I forgot about that.
Yeah, it made him youthful again.
I watched
again,
that
somehow.
One the other day. That's a funny one.
Yeah. So when all the women on the planet made the guys all old and feeble so they could gain their powers, and then you know, they go back and they fix it by putting him in the transporter. And
well, you also reminded me of Rascals from TNG, which is the same plot, actually, except they made them kids.
I was talking about Rascals.
Yeah, because remember, they were being...
Yeah.
They were
that
being,
was the Rascal. Yeah. There he goes.
So what was the other one? The Suliban, of course. The caveat there is that my recollection from Enterprise is the Suliban, which played a big role in Enterprise. I think the only ones you could shapeshift maybe were there were some genetically engineered ones, like the future people, like genetically engineered them as a reward for, you know, doing spy work and terrorist stuff for them.
I wonder what the secret alien that's going to eat bread. I don't know if that was necessarily. Or Salt Succubus. I don't know if that was just.
That's from TOS.
Oh, is that from TOS? Yeah.
That's from the Man Trap, which is the first episode, I think, that was ever aired of TOS. It was the third or fourth one filmed.
Yeah. Somebody wrote an article that said that was the funniest joke of the episode, was the reference to the Man Trap.
It was a good, reference.
It was entertaining.
There wasn't one that stood out to me like the sensors.
To me, the funnier one was that her board, her Mariner's conspiracy board, had a Bigfoot on it,
and it had the
and it also had a
humpback whale.
Yeah, it had a humpback whale.
Yeah, that was great. The humpback whale was awesome.
So,
I missed that. I gotta watch that.
Oh yeah, and she also.
Oh man, it's just there.
I didn't see the sexy worm lady from Enterprise's Rogue Planet though, because I would have wanted to see the worm.
And there was kind
creature.
Of a Bigfoot, but it was kind of covered.
Yeah, the
up
Bigfoot
in the back.
Was there. That was a good joke.
Yeah, no,
so
that was good.
She mentioned the Reptoid when she grabbed her hair, and then she made the connection of they barb you, they jab with they jab you with their Reptoid tail and implant a Reptoid spawn. They barb you, and that was a connection she made there.
Barb.
Her name is Barbara.
And there's
her
different kinds of shape changers in the Star Trek universe For example, when Mariner flashed back, when she
the
had...
The flashback is great,
that hair, I don't know what year,
the
that,
hair is
I don't know
awesome.
What year that hair was supposed
the
to take.
My daughter, awesome. My daughter loved that. My daughter was like, oh, is that how she used to look?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great.
It's pretty awesome.
No, it is a great scene.
She talks about a Harvonian shape changer or Harvongian or something shape changer. I can't remember if the G is like Gillian, if it's Harvongian or Harvongian or Harvonian. Harvongian.
The Merovingian.
But I don't know. I didn't look up the shape changer, but it basically turned into an alien and ate them.
Like melted her friend's face off.
Yeah, Angie. And then, but then Barb came around and threw it back at Mariner. And Barb the whole time thought Mariner was fucked up.
Right.
She thought
she was a rogue.
She thought she was a rogue holodeck character.
Yes,
a brain infiltrator.
A brain infiltrator.
Oh, I thought I read it as brain, but yeah, I will believe. You
I mean,
on
I
that
thought
one.
It was brain because brain is a you know they infiltrate stuff in Star Trek.
Okay.
Nobody knows what they look like under their little mat. The brain are the ones that are sort of the Boba Fett ripoffs.
So that I guess that makes more sense than I mean a brain infiltrator does sound pretty terrifying, but but brain I guess makes more sense.
It's important to note that it was. Awesome that flashback was at Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So it was at it.
She was at Deep Space Nine. They were at some bar on Deep Space Nine. We see her previous ship, the Keto, which we now know is a Prometheus class. You know, those ones with the big ball.
Oh, that's right.
Which
yeah.
is similar to...
Like one. A Conutheus class. It's a Prometheus class.
Prometheus.
A Conutheus class.
I'm not fully getting the joke.
Con-you.
Okay, I get it. I thought...
You're like, okay.
No, I mean, initially, I thought you were playing with the Latin roots and switching some Latin.
Yeah, I was
around.
Being real smart about that. Yeah.
No, but the Prometheus class, we saw that the first time in All Good Things in the future, the Q future with Beverly Crusher.
The future.
She was commanding a medical ship called the USS Pasteur, I believe, which was I think it was a Prometheus class. But anyway, whatever the class, you know,
that
the class
was
with the big
that was
ball
an early. designed the head for the Enterprise back in the 60s, and they decided it was too goofy.
We'll go with the saucer instead of the sphere.
So the last one that Barb said was Parasite, which it turned out to be, but plot twist, it wasn't on either Barb or Mariner. It was on
Boimler.
And then they talked about funny things he did, like how he peed in a toilet. He peed in a sink instead of a toilet.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Sure, Lorsian's egg sack. Right. Yeah, and then there's
but it took a while for him to figure it out that he was peeing in the sink because someone caught him peeing in the sink.
Yeah.
And that's what stopped him after like 6 or 7 days.
Yeah. So,
I think that made
and then Mariner aggravated. Mariner called it a googa. She called is that a thing? Is that a word? I guess
that's from an old Dan Harmon, Justin Roiland Channel 101 video. The googas. It's like
I remembered that from.
Yeah, it's like it's a play on on the Ghoulies. Basically,
the Ghoulies.
It's basically combines the Ghoulies, Critters, and Gremlins.
Right.
And but
it's go search YouTube. Do a search on YouTube for the Goo Gahs.
The Munchies.
Justin Roiland, the Goo Gahs. You will watch it.
You will watch it.
You will watch it.
You will watch it
now.
I don't want to make any promises beyond that. You will watch it.
Then they're going to go meet at a Matari tournament, which I kept thinking Atari. Or like there was this product called Vitari, which was some kind of fake ice cream or something.
Matari.
Or am I thinking of Tofuti? I don't know. Tofuti. Anyways, Matari. Matari, I can't remember.
Djibouti.
So the cool thing about the A plot is that, again, as we've mentioned in the past, this is a very old school Star Trek, current school Miyazaki style of the conflict is a result of a miscommunication / misapprehension. And once that is resolved, then the conflict is essentially resolved at that point, right? So both Mariner and Barbara Brinson were under the impression that the other had some sort of nefarious plan to do with Boimler, because they were both operating on the assumption that why would this super cool person hang out with this guy? And that was really funny that they both the moral lesson they learned was, hey, I'm cool and I like this guy. It's not that unusual that somebody else might also enjoy his company.
Right. And that was a good fight between the two of them.
That was an awesome fight.
that was pretty cool.
It was well done.
Fight scenes are pretty good in this.
I'm very impressed with the fight and action
scenes.
Where
did they go? Was it some kind of observatory thing that was around the moon?
They had a platform.
They had these construction platforms.
They were going to turn it into some kind of sex platform.
Yes. Well, Shax had mentioned something about how the platforms,
I like how the black
where they needed to be, had to be like run manually or something. They couldn't run them in an automated fashion. That's why that's why Boimler and Barbara had to head over there.
This episode really highlights how much Mariner how she feels about Boimler. Like, she really cares about him a lot, you know. So
he's her dork.
Yeah, and that really, and you get a feeling of that beforehand, but this one really lays it out there. Yeah. So she was jumping off the ship. Like, if she missed
she
that platform,
out in space. Yeah, it was great.
She would have floated off into nothing. I mean
she was having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Mariner was all
like,
open.
She was pushing people out of the way.
She was like, take that, Jennifer.
That Andorian. She's like, move, Jennifer.
Yeah, but she was like, that whole gag where it's knocking people out of the way, except she's actively like fucking with them. There were some good stills of that, like where the second one she pushed in her face just makes this kind of kissy, like, she like pushes someone. There's some good stills there. By the way, I looked it up and Den of Geek, it's a Breen infiltrator. So
Breen.
I guess I'm just
I can't do the Breen.
I'm just an asshole. And when I looked up Lower Decks Brain Infiltrator, it said
Google said you are stupid.
It said it looks like there aren't any great matches for your search. Try using words that might appear on the page you're looking for.
You have internet connectivity problems.
Saying you are stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
We can't find what you're looking for, which means it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
it would be even better if it had suggested, if in the suggested field, it just populated with ENT doctors to, you know, get your ear.
Can't you send me off? Here, you should do this.
Internet connectivity problems.
I have brain connectivity problems.
Brain. We've already talked about the arc and the resolution of the story.
No, we haven't.
But there were a lot of really just fun little character bits, you know, here and there. I thought it was not only in character, we also learn a little bit more about Boimler, where he's doing the typical thing where he's get something good and he immediately starts to fuck it up and ruin it.
Yeah.
In a very standard way, admittedly, but it also does fit the character. You know, yes. He can't believe
that he has this hot ass girl.
And meanwhile, smart. One of his best friends is also telling him that she can't believe that this woman would be after you. So his insecurities are really affecting him.
It's a long
there.
Time since I took a lover.
Yeah, I love that
lover. Yeah. I'm going to make love to my lover.
He was,
and the little goo guy was all like, lover, lover,
lover, lover, lover. Yeah, the parasite.
Barb, barb, lover, barb, lover, lover.
I'll take
lover.
You out to a nice dinner.
Yeah. Dinner, lover, 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 lover.
Yeah, what was that goo guy saying? He was saying some shit. Was
lover.
He?
Yeah.
He was like saying,
lover.
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 Lover. Oh.
Lover.
I liked in the mess hall where kind of shit started first going down, going poorly for Boimler, when he shows up in his outfit where he's got half Letterman jacket and football, half leather jacket. Yeah. He's got some Mr. T style gold chains
he doesn't
on.
Mean his hair is at all. One point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And
moonwalks
he's
to the replicator asked for that.
I was trying to see
hot beer.
I was
the hot and cold beer.
I was wondering if one of his shoes was supposed to be like Marty McFly in Back to the Future 2.
Right,
because
he had different shoes and different socks.
And then he put on those glasses. Those like future looking glasses.
Mm-hmm.
But I, by pure coincidence, I happened to pause the video there for a moment to take some notes. And then I glanced at the video and I caught sight of all the food that was on the table. There were people eating sushi, there was ramen. A bunch of either nachos or loaded fries. I don't and those nachos show up in the preview for the next week's episode. So I don't know if that's like just everyone likes eating.
But
nachos.
No macaroni with breading on top, or fritters, or right. or gnocchi.
There were no what gnocchi. That? There were hamburgers or cheeseburgers, possibly. I couldn't tell. And then there was some form of pie, but I couldn't tell if it was a savory pie or a sweet pie.
Hmm.
It was dark on the inside. It was a slice of pie.
So to make you hungry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hungry right now.
Yeah, loaded nachos. Whenever I see pictures of loaded nachos, loaded. It fucks me up. I'm just like, oh,
I prefer.
Man.
Yeah.
Tendi's always eating like some tacos or like a taco salad.
Yeah, she likes tacos
and nachos.
It was always me, Barb. I'm going to treat you to dinner. Let me out. Let me out. Lover, 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 lover,
lover, lover.
It was always me, Barb.
And it totally works.
Worked.
It totally did, and it was rad.
And I really liked Boimler's line when he starts realizing that he fucked up. Well, okay, so he's stalking her basically, and he overhears Barb and
Jet.
Making what sound like sex sounds.
Shut up.
When they're trying to replace a pipe.
Oh, you can fit it in.
What was funny is they're literally,
like so obvious,
they're literally laying pipe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. Laying that pipe.
It's a multi-level joke because they are in fact laying pipe. But when he realizes his mistake and he just starts saying, it's dissolving, it's all dissolving. I was like, oh my God, that's so horrible. It's such an accurate, succinct way to describe just like the dissolution of a horrible, like of a wonderful, potentially wonderful relationship.
I was looking up Harvonian, and now there's starting to be more Lower Deck episodes popping up on the internet, first of all, I noticed. Before, the first episode, I'd type it in, and it would just kept going to the TNG episode.
The internet.
But the internet's starting to have more starting to have more results. And in fact, Harvonian, the only results I get for Star Trek is that thing where it's directing me right back to that episode. So it's got to be referencing something, you would think. But it doesn't. The internet doesn't
make up. I mean, every Star Trek show also makes up new shit.
You're right. You're right. But you're right. And there was that thing last week, and I can't remember the name of the race. It was like Helvetica Ariel or something. But it was the only reference I found of it.
Fonts.
Well, the only reference I found in it was some kind of PDF quote unquote technical manual that was 205 pages long, and there was one reference to it in the whole thing, and it's all a reference. So that was like had to have been a reference to
it's
that.
It's great
so.
When you find stuff on that only exists in a PDF.
Yeah,
PDF.
Right. You're like, this is for real now. I'm super.
It's even
smart.
Better if you find one of those HTML pages it's just a pure Apache list of directories and files.
Oh my God.
Just
oh yeah.
Blue text on a white background.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. That's when you're downloading some wares.
Meh.
Juarez.
It's wares, isn't it?
Wares. Wares from Juarez.
We used to have this big argument back in the day. There was always this argument over because Dan and I each we ran a bulletin board system.
Night Rabbit.
And
bulletin board.
We were sysops or sysops.
I always called it sysops.
Sysop is probably more correct, but a lot of people in the 90s called it a sysop because I think just because it sounded cooler.
Sensors.
Sysop is more, I think. Sort of grammatically.
Sysop is more fun.
Sysop is more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And back in those days, we had to capitalize the word internet, and you had to have the in front of it. It was the capital I internet.
Internet.
Yeah. I mean, that's what AP told you. That's what Chicago told you. That's what the APA told
Chicago,
you.
Chicago.
All the styles.
1920 Chicago, and they don't.
It wasn't
their
until the new millennium, I think, that they started lowercasing internet as a generic rather than specific thing. Because you used to call it the information superhighway,
right? And people would make people made a lot of jokes about surfing and stuff. But
surfing the net.
You'd get your weird Prodigy or America Online or your CompuServe sort of thing. And then if you wanted to go out and leave and go to the Wild West of the internet, they charged you like $2 a minute or something.
Nuts.
And it was super slow. So yeah, you didn't venture out too far to the internet because it was freaky deaky. But
we used to play on the internet before there was a web. We played on web. We used Gopher and Telnet. That's the age range.
Your host, FidoNet.
FidoNet ruled.
Yeah,
I love FidoNet, even though you had to wait a day.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was forward thinking.
Anyway, pre-internet was a good time because the world wasn't great, but you know.
It was less shitty, maybe?
It seemed less shitty.
It
might have been more shitty.
Yeah,
it could have been. It seemed less shitty.
There was definitely some darker things like on the internet.
You could get a big giant Slurpee for like 45 cents.
On the internet, yeah. It's crazy.
No, before the internet.
Not on the
internet. No.
Remember when you'd get in the newspaper, McDonald's sent that record out that was like the McDonald's wrap. It was the menu and it was on a square record.
I never listened to it.
I never got it. My parents threw it away before I saw it, and I was really mad. It was a big deal in school knowing all the words. That and Ice Ice Baby.
Wow.
For some reason.
The McDonald's rap. Baby. That's pretty funny.
I really liked when the red alien guy, you know, first of all, it was funny when Jet was talking about, like, there's a bunch of purple people, you know, causing a ruckus or whatever. But the red fellow, he's arguing with Captain Freeman and he mentions the Prime Directive and she's straight up like, that doesn't even apply.
Yeah, because it always does.
Everyone
brings it up. It always applies. And it's always applying when they're not even bringing up. You're like, wait a minute, Prime Directive applies here. But this is the one time it actually has nothing to do with
anything. It was like, no, this is not a Prime Directive situation. That was funny.
Yeah.
I really liked when Mariner and Barb were, getting into their argument. Mm-hmm. Barb says, he's mousy, sweet, and soft, and you're a badass space adventurer.
Yeah.
And that was her argument for, like, why she was suspicious that she was, you know, loitering around Boimler, lurking.
Stay away from
him. She called him a dainty-hipped nugget.
I want dainty-hipped.
Dainty.
Probably better than birth bearing hips. Is that what they say?
I don't think you're supposed to say that.
Well, I mean, it's.
I don't think anybody should say that.
I don't know how to respond. I was like, yeah, well.
On a guy, that's all right.
Well, no, it's either. Is it worse to have birth bearing hips or dainty hips? I don't know.
I don't think it matters.
Arnold Schwarzenegger had like calves that he was always self conscious about because he said they were too small. So. He was probably before he was strong.
But his calves were like huge, man.
Yeah, they became huge because he becomes self-conscious about how small they were.
I lift some weights.
So you got nowhere to go but up on that one.
Nowhere to go but up.
Got big
butt up.
Butter.
This one's like butter.
Butt up.
Admiral Vastri, that was last week. Sensors.
Sensors.
Hyverion, that's what it was. Hyverion metronome.
And what was it this week? Merovingian?
It was a Hervonian shape changer.
Hervonian
Carolingian.
The Carolingian
dynasty. I like words.
Words are weird.
Yeah, the Hyverion. It was. Yeah, it was in this.
Words.
I'm opening up the PDF again. The Federation.
Oh shit!
It's the
PDF.
It's the Federation
portable document format.
It's the Federation. Can I? It's fine. Just all I'm trying to say is Federation Ship Recognition Manual 2385 edition. Thank you. That's all I was trying to say. I appreciate it. I very much appreciate it. Y'all are wonderful. I love
it's
you.
It's goddamn.
And that's where they mentioned
Federation Dan. Remember, you're the Federation. You're the good guys.
It was the because it was blown up by the Defiant. We don't know if it's TOS or DS9 Defiant.
No,
the Defiant got blown up by it. Kyverian terrorists. Apparently they make metronomes.
Kyverian terrorist, cool. Hyringian, Carolingian,
Hyrvonian,
Merovingian.
Hyrvonian Pungi Goongs.
In the flashback with Mariner on Space Nine, they were wearing the First Contact style uniforms.
With the gray
tops that was also introduced in Deep Space Nine in season 5.
They're also talking about the Borg. Yes. And
Data's
and
brother.
The Enterprise. It's like, it's always something new.
every week with those
every
guys.
Every week it seems like it's something new with those guys.
That was awesome.
When she said the ship, I think it was Tendi said the ship's kind of falling apart. I think that, yeah, that was at the end, I think, after they got their T-80. No, that was before.
They talked about it
in the beginning a little
bit. In the beginning, they're like, he's like, oh, it smells
every ship's got a different smell.
You know, toasty marshmallows to me. She's like, oh my God, is that a plasma fire?
Yeah, I don't know what plasma fires smell like, but I bet it's a mix between electrical fires and tire fires.
Yeah, it just has it's a horrible smell.
I bet there's no vanilla in there at all.
No, and at the end when they're like, oh, that's
acidic.
At the end when they're like, oh, that smell is smoke, and I'm thinking like, no, I've blown out amps before where they just start smoking, and you're like, oh, that smells like we should. We're all gonna die.
I like the smell of gasoline.
This is, I don't know, the
smell of napalm.
This is neither here nor there, but when she said, I think it was Tendi who said it, ship's kind of falling apart, I thought it sounded like shit's kind of falling apart.
Shit's just kind of falling apart, man.
When we meet her, will it be on the holodeck?
Holodeck.
He doesn't do that anymore. We already mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
Love that story, Bun Bun.
Move, Jennifer. Get out of the way, Jennifer.
Jet's hot.
So this story was packed, jam-packed.
You shut up.
Kirk Sunday.
You shut up.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. The Kirk Sunday with Chip Tucker sprinkles.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
Chip Tucker is so hot.
Chip Tucker.
Chip Tucker is super hot, you know? He is. There's something really attractive about that man. Physically, mentally.
It's the Florida accent.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't care less about the looks or the smarts. It's just that pure Florida accent.
Isn't some part of him from Texas?
Yeah, the actor's not from Florida. He's an actor. He was playing a character.
I'm saying his character, I thought, was part of it was from Texas.
From Florida.
All Florida. He didn't sound like he was from Florida.
Mm. Yeah, he kind of
does. Floridians don't have accents.
Yeah, I made a mistake. I pronounced the word wrong. Oh, it's a big thing.
And we're going to put it on the internet.
I'm stupid.
I forgot to say Floridians.
Floridian is kind of silly.
I don't think anybody says that. Really.
Yeah, I mean,
they
people
just say
from Florida.
Those fucking people from Florida.
You call them Florida man. I think
so, Florida man and Florida woman.
Florida woman.
So when Mariner
Florida
said
people,
when Mariner said that Jet is the second coolest person on Cerritos, was she saying that I'm the coolest person, or was she trying to make
her? She was saying herself.
But I was thinking maybe she meant like, I want to make Boimler feel better, so I'll keep it open ended so he can think that maybe he's the best.
No,
that's a generous interpretation.
That's all her.
I think it's kind of you to have that interpretation. I think she thought,
she's the coolest person.
She probably is.
She is pretty cool,
right?
And then she goes, something, Barb is great, a little too great. That reminded me of Ninja Turtles when, like, one of the turtles goes...
Full circle.
It goes, a little too Raph.
Yeah.
I can't remember. That was the cartoon.
It's Raph. It wasn't the... It was the Ninja Turtles 2.
It
was the second live-action movie.
I thought it was either the cartoon or the first movie. I totally mixed that up.
No, because the first movie is a good movie.
Yeah.
And then the second movie is entertaining.
It's got some good ninja action,
it's its own kind of thing.
It's like kind of has that feeling of like, this isn't quite there. Yeah. But okay, so yeah, the second one goes, it's Raph, a little too Raph.
And if you want to hear more about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, you should be listening to the new Earwolf podcast. We gotta stop talking TMNT on CBB.
Don't be.
Is that
like
Adam Scott?
Danny?
No, it's not. No, Adam Scott is. Like Adam Scott is the. Adam Scott and Scott Aukerman are doing the. Talking Heads to My Talking Head? That's their current podcast. But separately, Scott Aukerman started a podcast with his one guy who plays a character. He started a character on Comedy Bang Bang where he just sort of got into this riff about talking about working on the original or trying to work on the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, and then everyone started mentioning it on Comedy Bang Bang like this whole year. Not even with that actor on the show, just other people keep bringing up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So they started a spin-off podcast. I think the first one's free. I think it's like a, you know, I don't know, it's not Spotify, Stitcher exclusive probably to get the rest of them, but it's really silly.
In that room with Lieutenant Commander Ron Docent Jr. I forgot Emmanuel.
Ron Emanuel.
It's funny because it's like Ron Emanuel, but it's Ron Emanuel.
Ron Emanuel, right? She smacked
it
him.
My brain.
She smacked him in the face to make sure they weren't dreaming, and he just thought it was silly that she did that.
Yeah, like, that was
smacked
awesome.
A superior officer. He's like, oh,
and it sort of makes sense in retrospect when you realize that he was trying to get the hell out of there. So he was looking for any way out.
So the way they solved the moon problem is they relocated the moon dust for people to worship, which is nice. They had a gravity system installed for the tides, and then they had ancestral homes relocated to the sixth moon, which, as she said, is now will be the fifth moon again, anyways.
So is that like a Wrath of Khan thing? The sixth and the fifth moon? Am I just reaching for it?
That's a good catch.
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
They do seem to have, like, every episode seems to have some weird subtle reference.
This is City Alpha 5!
If you think it's a reference, it probably is a reference in this show.
So
if it means something to you, it's probably actually a reference to Star Trek. Like,
so
that's like when you're in English class in sixth grade and they're like, you can interpret it the poem however
any way you want to.
That's not exactly what I'm saying.
My neck. But, albatross.
But, you know, because it's so dense with references, like,
it's like, why did they pick five and six?
Yeah.
They didn't have to. They could have picked other numbers.
That's what I'm saying.
So there were four people with problems. There were three solutions. So it just meant they never dealt with that. They never dealt with that conspiracy guy. They were just like,
oh, yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah. Fuck that guy.
You know, which is appropriate. It's just those people are meant to be pushed aside. Just like, I guess that's a fucked up thing to say, because what if somebody was for real about it? You know, you don't want to push aside someone who's actually got something to say.
Logical dictates. It's like, fuck him.
Yeah, really, fuck him. There's really nothing to do.
Fuck him.
The conspiracy guy.
Loud tricorder noises.
Loud tricorder noises.
Oh, that was the android thing. I thought that was that's funny because it was basically the culmination of other episodes used as kind of a referential joke, throwaway joke.
Yeah, like when Data's dreaming and he gets rid of the interphasic creatures by screaming.
Yeah, that's silly. There was a scene when Boimler came in and was like, "Debris, what is this, a cheese party?"
Yeah.
And he somehow knocks all the digital planets all over the room.
Yeah, that was great.
They spill everywhere. But he's all like, the digital planets, bleep. They spill all and bounce all over
and
the room.
Jet fix it. But, he's like, hold on, buddy, I'll fix it for you.
If you listen to that, if you watch that scene again, listen to the beginning, and it has some classic, like, Star Trek beep 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 noises that are just straight up lifted.
And he's all like, it's good stuff. I want to see my girl do her thang.
Thang.
Like, and all the other lieutenants are just like, get this look on their face, just like oh
no. Yeah, no, he played that well.
Now, I've always been unclear on the definition of implode, because it seems to insinuate that, yeah, it goes in on itself and it doesn't go out. But I guess things can go out after they go in, because that planet, the moon imploded, but then there was a moon ring. There was an asteroid belt now, or a moon ring, or there was rings around... not Uranus, but Mixtus 3, which
that's
was either
what
the
I was going to say.
I don't know.
I believe there are hard to detect, but I do believe there are rings around Uranus.
I took a shower.
I was checking before.
I took a shower.
Not nearly as prominent as Saturn's
rings.
You were talking about the planet.
It's a tiny little ring. That's how they know, like, Uranus is all on its side.
It's ready for a colonoscopy.
Do you ever think they'll land a man on
Uranus?
I'm a child,
because I laughed so hard at that.
So I don't remember if...
Is that the one that's on the side, or is it Neptune? Like, one of them's like... One of those.
Well, they all have rings, but one of them's axis is almost
Horizontal.
I think it's Uranus.
Uranus got hit by something and got knocked all wacky. Yeah, it's off
it's
filter.
It's all skewed off planet. Just like Venus is going the wrong way.
Right.
So Uranus... Why don't they call it uranium? Like, as in Uranus, uranium, instead of uranium. They should call it uranium.
It's from the god Uranus.
What's uranium from?
Same root.
Erectum.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's from erectum.
I believe we may have mentioned this before, but the curious thing about, you know, we say if you're from Earth, you're an Earthling. You know, if
Welcome
you're from
Earth.
Mars, you're a Martian. Terran. If you're from Jupiter, you're Jovian.
And you get more stupider.
Jovian.
Right? Saturnian.
What if you're from Alpha Centauri?
They had to make something new, because the correct grammatical structure for something that is of Venus would be venereal.
Right. Mm.
But they didn't want to say that, so they came up with Venusian.
Venusian.
It's like,
which is incorrect.
Yeah.
So I couldn't you argue it? It's sextet instead of a hexagon. It's a sexagon, I guess, right? But they don't say
that. Welcome to the sexagon.
Sexagon.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like...
There's no judgments.
There's nobody
sexagon.
Giggling, I guess. I couldn't remember if Mixtus 3 was the planet or the system. But anyways, if Mixtus 3 was...
the planet.
It was cool that it had a...
The Mixtus system. And then Mixtus 3 is the planet.
Oh, okay. That sounds right. It was cool that it had like a belt now, but or a ring. But I don't know. I don't know what the difference when they say implode the planet. I guess I'm just not. I think of imploding as going in on itself, exploding going out. But now do things implode, then explode? I guess it depends, but it's misleading is what I'm trying to say.
I suspect there may be some, as in all languages, it may be a deficiency of the English language in that the term implode and explode have seemingly explicit meanings, but I think they can be used differently. When you bring down an apartment complex, you usually hear people say they're imploding
it.
Even though they're not really, it's just a bunch of little explosions.
It's still a demolition.
Falling in on itself.
Demolition.
That's fair enough.
As opposed to flinging out. And I think that's
debris.
It's safer. They're using implode perhaps in a more colloquial manner than is appropriate, but you know,
that's why the force field
it's still
around
gets the point across.
Yeah, you know? I mean, because you know when they shoot it, it's like.
We encourage our listeners to write in and tell us the definition, especially if you're
physics.
A scientist,
set us straight.
If you're a physicist, if you're a demolitions expert.
Tell me I'm stupid. I'm really into that.
Okay, there's two key
Dan's
points here.
Smart.
Tell me how dumb I am.
Point one is we're eager to hear the actual definitions. So
and sexy.
Tweet us, write us. We'll give you that information in just a bit.
If anyone's a scientist.
The second point is that Dan does enjoy, to some degree, abuse. He is a very clever person. He's very smart. So calling him stupid just doesn't work because it's like not insulting.
And Dominatrix, please give him a call.
It's not going to make him feel bad. Is my point. You can be like, Dan, you're so stupid. And he'll be like, haha, those assholes called me stupid. Because he knows he's not stupid.
So little do they know.
It doesn't stick.
Yeah. I mean, we all get a certain perverse joy from creating any sort of reaction out there. It's
especially
sort of,
me.
It's implicit to the human experience that we
Jesse,
like to affect things
that?
At a distance, right? The cave people like to throw the spears.
The wizards like to throw fireballs.
Wizards like to throw fireballs, shooting bullets, shooting missiles. People, men in particular, enjoy affecting things at a distance. And that's why when you're a toddler,
do they enjoy the effect of things? Do they enjoy the effect of things at a distance?
No, they enjoy effecting things.
Not the effect?
They don't like the effect. They like the effect of... The effect that results in them affecting something at a difference. So if you throw a rock at a gazelle and hit it on the head, which, by the way, is not a common hunting practice.
Don't do that.
Humans traditionally would hunt through persistence hunting, which is that humans have more endurance than any animal on the planet. So humans would just run an animal until it died or until it fell down and from... you know, exhaustion, and then they'd stab it in the head.
That's right. The way you debate.
That, yeah. So some people debate. But anyway, so any other wrapping up final thoughts about this episode? Cool things that jump out at you? Anything that we missed in terms of Easter eggs or fun jokes?
They said inertial dampers.
That old debate.
Dampers.
They were comparing the inertial dampers of the Vancouver.
We've talked about this before.
The Vancouver.
Welcome to the Sexagon.
The Vancouver's inertial dampers versus the Cerritos apparently had bad inertial dampers or something. So, yeah, that's...
Sometimes it's inertial dampers. We've had this discussion. Sometimes it's dampeners, sometimes it's dampers.
Jesse, we have had this discussion, but now it's like I feel like I need... I wasn't
trying to say we've had this discussion and like, we can't talk about it. I was just saying, haven't we, you know...
Word up.
It sounds
we looked
familiar.
It up at some point.
Word.
And it bears repeating.
So to the audience out there, we cannot give you our conclusive opinion on dampers versus inertial dampers versus inertial dampeners because we have, and since we don't want to contradict ourselves, what we recommend is you go back through our back catalog of, there's 40 previous episodes, and somewhere in there we had this debate and came to some form of conclusion.
We just can't remember.
We don't
remember
it, but we don't want to contradict ourselves.
Set
because,
us straight.
You know. That would make us look like total pieces of shit.
I'm going to say it was mentioned on TNG before as dampers before anything else, but I don't know what TOS did, so I can't say.
Yeah, well, somebody has to go back and listen to all the episodes. And by the way, if there's any highlight clips you want to mark out, just send them our way, and then we can put them in the highlight episodes.
It's like blood to us.
Around
blood.
Christmas.
What's your
something.
Favorite part?
I got you a present, Dan. I got you a present. Bunch of T-88s.
Whoa. How'd you know?
How'd you know?
That was cute.
I was really happy.
We were friends.
I was really happy for them that they got a bunch of T-88s at the end.
Well, I like how they stole it, basically.
Yeah, they stole it, but they now it's like their ship's a little better.
Those two are really cute, and they keep like just playing up how they're just the adorable nerds.
Yes.
Yeah. See, they're all rascals.
It was the opposite of like Al Bundy Married with Children thing, where it's like, just let this guy have the $10,000 he won in the competition, but nope, he doesn't get it. You're just like, okay. It's like, you could have just given it to him this one episode, but they never do. But this one, they got all the T-88s.
In the last episode, she wanted to see an ascension, and she did.
Yes.
It made it, maybe it wasn't quite how she thought it would go.
But she was happy.
But she was happy because she got to do her thing.
She volunteered, and she wasn't forced into it.
It was cool. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was
fun.
Funny. I thought it was entertaining. I think you're starting, I've enjoyed every episode so far to varying degrees. The third episode was, I found, a little bit less engaging. The first couple episodes, there was a lot of character building and stuff, but like any show, and particularly like any Star Trek show, you're starting to feel it get its legs, get the characters are vibing with each other. The stories, again, as I said earlier on, I think the real key, and we'll monitor this as we're watching these episodes. I think if the plot really hews closely, at least the B plot, if whatever the foundational plot that's driving the overall story in an episode, if it hews closely to that tried and true Star Trek formula, but then jumps off from there, that seems to be something that works really well for these writers and for the characters, because you get that comfy, cozy Star Trek vibe.
Right. They're doing their own thing, but they're also paying homage
precisely
to all the ones behind and making fun of all of them at the same time, but being kind about it at the same way
and making
their own thing
and making fun of things that, you know, as a Star Trek fan, you think of when you're watching Star Trek about like, why don't they do this? Or isn't it annoying that they do that? Or what does it smell like when you're posted near the sonic showers? Okay, if that's all, should we go ahead and move along to the
feedback
final portion of the show? Move along home.
Humpbackwhales.com.
Where we describe
how
you can communicate
Home Alone 4
with your kind podcast hosts.
Move along home.
You can contact
I'm making a reference,
us.
Patrick.
Yes,
totally.
I understand. Everyone understands.
You should
move along home.
Drive
it's
to
a
Dan's
Star
house.
Trek podcast.
First Shep.
Okay, I can't wait till we get to do that episode, because I think that's a much maligned episode.
Good reason.
No, it's not a good episode. We will not. We'll save it for when we talk about Move Along.
I didn't know where you're going with that. I thought you were going to like, no, it's not a good reason. No, I was like, well, it's a little bit of a good reason.
I merely preview opinion. Who knows when we'll get a chance to do this, but preview opinion is it doesn't deserve quite as much disdain as it gets. I think it gets a lot of it because it is a very awkward episode in the context of Deep Space Nine.
These are your players. We'll start them on the second Shep. Second Shep? Can't we start at the beginning? Only children enter at the first Shep.
Dan is doing an excellent job of thoroughly undermining my argument. Probably months before I get a chance to make it.
We'll all forget.
That's his dorsal.
Dorsal.
But anyway, Cupid's Errant Arrow, fun episode. And next week, again, we don't know what the name of the episode's going to be. So hopefully, they've been kind of slow to release the names of the episodes after the first four. So we'll post it online. By next week, you'll know what it is.
Real quick. I wanted to mention this. When she goes, you're clearly not a parasite, or you wouldn't have let him puh, and then they kind of bleep it out in front of the admiral. Like, they were obviously made that ambiguous, but it's like, what? Because it was like puh.
Was it
but
piss? Was it pull it out? Because I thought he might have been saying, like, pull it out or pump.
It almost sounded like she said pump.
Pump in front of the admiral.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Got me thinking. It wasn't the usual. They gave you a little bit. They gave you a couple letters. Bit,
yeah. Welcome to the Sexagon.
And Boimler's Axe body spray kind of penis.
Oh, yeah, he was naked again.
Yeah, he was naked.
Yeah, another naked, another nudity. And
so much they
it.
Had to have a censor bar.
Right, the censor is like the Axe.
It was a pretty. It was a pretty
commercial back in the day.
Back those weird commercials. Yeah, man.
It was a pretty. It was a pretty large redaction.
Yeah, because we're old.
Yeah.
Because we're old. That's why I remember that.
We're so old.
Oh shit.
The internet, capital I.
Errol's internet.
Errol's internet. It is now time for Dan to provide us provide you, the audience, I should say, because we know all this stuff.
It's
the
got
audience, the communications routes through subspace.
It's got Star Trek at feed. No, wait.
He thought he was doing well, and he was doing well.
Except if I was doing wrongly. Well, yeah. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
That is the email address.
And
derived from the email address is the website. What's the website?
www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Excellent. And on the social media, that media that is slowly grinding the world to pieces, morally and now physically, it seems, the social media that's ruining everything, how can you find us on there?
At It's Got Star Trek.
That's right. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find us at It's Got Star Trek. We're on YouTube, right? That's cool. Yeah, people YouTube. Like
That's
that.
Neat. That's fun.
Gotta be on the YouTube.
Yeah, you can go to the It's Got Everything subreddit.
We're not on the RedTube.
The RedTube.
Not yet.
The RedTube.
Maybe we'll do some RedTube stuff at some point, or YouPorn stuff, if enough people request it.
It can be all sexy, you know, Star Trek style.
Send us an email, send us a tweet,
and
let us know.
We're gonna need more costumes.
If you want us to do more stuff on RedTube or on YouPorn, or on,
you jizz.
Like, yeah.
What?
I don't know.
No, yes, you do. but anyway, yeah.
I don't do that anymore.
Facebook.
Welcome to the Sexagon.
Facebook, just search for It's Got Star Trek. If you're hearing this in a non-standard way, and if you haven't already subscribed.
Sometimes good for you guys for being non-standard.
It's okay to be non-standard, but if you haven't subscribed, you should subscribe. You get a podcast app, get, Apple Podcast or Google Podcast Addict or
Apple
Pocket Cast.
They should make one called Apple Podcast Pie.
Why?
Why not that?
Because it's a clever name, like Apple Podcast Pie.
Apple Pod Pie.
What if you had like a pie pod and it was just like this little like turnover thing? It was just like a little pod of apple pie.
Would it have those? Would it have like the podcast on a USB or something? How would it?
It would have a USB port.
All right, so you can
like
get
the
us.
Steam
you can get us anywhere. Just search using search devices and search fields for It's Got Star
like
Trek.
The search device, like the stick that has two prongs and you hold
and
the
you
two
look
prongs
for water.
And you
it's called the dowsing rod.
But you also find podcasts with it.
Yes.
So
you could more easily find a podcast than water with a dowsing rod.
I bet that works.
No,
you can listen to podcasts while you're. I'm not going to try to.
You can
insult.
Use it to go clickety click on your mouse.
Yeah, somebody could see you using it and come up to you and be like, "What are you doing?" And they'd be listening to a podcast and be like, "Wow, you just."
I'm listening to this podcast and holding this.
I'm listening to it,
acting like
it's
a fool.
Got Star Trek.
But yeah, search for It's Got Star Trek, subscribe, and like, and all the other stuff the kids
like
say.
It's
reviews, I don't know, that's good too. People like to, do the review.
Review that shit.
It was
review
really good.
It.
I like the part when Dan said this, and then it was really cool.
When Dan was trying to say something, and everybody kept interrupting.
But then he won out in the end.
Federation.
That's everyone's favorite.
Federation.
It's not my favorite.
All right, well, it's not Jesse's favorite, but that has been. It's Got Star Trek. And we will see you again next week for the episode 6 of Lower Decks.
Sex.
So
they should call it episode Hicks, not 6, because it sounds like sex.
Episode 6.
Episode Hicks.
This will be goodbye from Patrick, and then goodbye from, you all say goodbye. Say
goodbye.
Don't tell me what to do.
All right. So we'll talk to you again next week.
Bye, guys. My name's Dan.
Stay safe.
My name is Dan.
It was always me, Barb. I'm going to treat you to dinner. Let me out.
Apparently, this species reproduces by making their host chemically irresistible to potential mates.
So, Boimler must have picked it up.
Right before he met me, exactly.
Wait, are you saying you only liked me because of the parasite?
Please, I'm a Starfleet officer. You think I'd be into a guy just because of his pheromones?
Oh, thank God. I was worried you were gonna break up with me.
Yeah, listen, Brad, you're sweet, but right now I need to put all my energy into my job, specifically studying this fascinating parasite.
Love it.